The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
A new study revealing cosmetic concerns. Researchers at the University of Notre Dame finding dangerous substances in many makeup products. And some of those chemicals, they say, can cause cancer.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I don't know if you use cosmetics or not. I would assume a lot of women do. You might need to turn up the radio. That was 7 News. We're going to talk about it coming up. We're in the middle of the summer right now, right? Sun's out. It's hot. Temperature is up there. The beach is inviting. It's time to get outside. But that, of course, means with the sun, you got to put some sunscreen on so you don't get burned. You know, I'm Italian, so my skin tends to get tanned pretty easily. But, you know, if I'm not careful that first time out, I get red, you know, and you can get burned. So, you know, sunscreen's is an important thing. I'm going to be speaking to a dermatologist coming up in just a second. And you might have some questions, too. You can, of course, join us here anytime. 888-914-9149. Dr. Thomas McGovern is going to be stopping by. But I saw the story, and that's why I invited him to stop by, that it just, you know, it has given me pause, to be honest with you. You know, there's a company called Valisure. They're an online pharmacy, and they're also a testing lab. So they put a number of sunscreens to the test, right? What they found was disturbing. They tested 300, let me repeat that, 300 different lotions and sprays. They found that 78 of them had traces of benzene in them, a chemical which, well, it's known to cause leukemia, right? So those products include, and again, do your own diligence here. I'll just throw out the names that I came across. Neutrogena, CVS, Banana Boat, and Valisure is concerned about the chemical that's in there. They went so far as to ask the FDA to recall those products. So if you have a cancer-causing agent in a product that's going to be slathered all over someone's body, and it's known to cause leukemia, I'm with them. So now I got to check my my sunscreen here, see what the wife and the kids have, right? Make sure that that's not in there, but it may be in all of them. I don't know. I'm not the dermatologist. It's not only sunscreens. There was a study that was done by the University of Notre Dame on 230 commonly used cosmetics, and according to the Associated Press, more than half of the cosmetics sold in the U.S. and Canada, okay, not just our country, likely contain high levels of toxic industrial compounds. So here's a little bit more from 7 News in Boston. Listen to this.
New study from the University of Notre Dame that found some cosmetics contain high levels of toxic chemicals called PFAS, which are linked to kidney cancer and thyroid disease. Notre Dame physics professor Graham Peasley tested more than 230 different brands and kinds of cosmetics and found PFAS in more than half the products.
That was very shocking.
Some of the highest levels were in waterproof mascara and long-lasting lipsticks and foundations.
The kicker was that we didn't see anything on the labels. The labels would give you no indication that there were PFAS present in these products.
And Dr. Peasley says since people apply makeup on their skin and lips, it gets absorbed directly into their body.
The consumer would have no idea that they're wearing these on their face or on their eyes or anywhere else. And that's concerning.
It was also concerning for Dr. Brad McGregor, a cancer specialist at Dana-Farber, who says more research should be done to determine if there's a link between certain cosmetics and cancer.
I think the question is, what is the significance of PFAS and what is a true risk of danger? And I think that's something that's been very difficult.
All right. So you look, I just want truth, right? I want to know whether or not, yeah, your cosmetics, ladies, do they contain high levels of toxic industrial compounds like linked to serious health conditions, including cancer or reduced birth weight and some of the others that these articles are making claims to? Or is this being painted with too broad of a brush? The acronym for PFAS, P-F-A-S, the actual name is unpronounceable. So, it's used for making nonstick cookware and fighting foam and rugs and water-resistant sports gear and The problem is that, you know, it's called a forever chemical. It doesn't dissipate. It's kind of like mercury or these other heavy metals that can build up in the bloodstream. So you read this stuff and you think, could this possibly be true? I mean, how can cosmetic companies or companies that sell sunscreen, would they really allow a cancer-causing agent or something toxic in their products? And I wanted clarity because you might hear this reported somewhere else. So I went to one of the best. I went to Dr. Thomas McGovern. He's a dermatologist from Fort Wayne Dermatology Consultants. And he specializes in diagnosis and prevention and treatment of skin cancer, and most common cancer in the world, by the way. And asked him to go over the reports, look into it, and give me his take on it. He joins me now. Doctor, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Good to be here.
Yeah, always good to talk to you. Boy, we talked about a lot of different things. I have not spoken to you about about dermatology before, so it's good to have you on with us. I was struck. I thought of you when I saw these stories, though. And my first reaction always is, why would companies put a known carcinogen into a product that's going to be absorbed by the skin unless they don't think it's that concerning? So, what have you read? What do we see? What do you know?
Well, let's start with the sunscreen study. In reading through the details of it, benzene, which is a carcinogen, and by the way, is found in large quantities in cigarette smoke sold over the counter in tobacco products, was found in some batches of some sunscreens. So if you look at the list of 300 and you look at the ones where the benzene was found, it was only found in some of those batches. So not all that Neutrogena, only a small percentage of the Neutrogena had it in only some of those batches. And the authors of the article say that. So if you want to be extra safe, find something on their big list, which is published online, that didn't have any benzene. The second question is, even though it was found there, we don't know if or how much of it was absorbed. So that's something that the FDA is going to research. But they're not purposely putting the benzene in. It seems to be a problem with manufacturing process. And what it may be is that a favor is being done to show how to improve their manufacturing processes. So I don't think there's anything nefarious going on with the benzene at all. And it'll probably make people better manufacturers. I noticed that there was a high percentage of sunscreen sprays versus creams and lotions that were positive for it. So I don't know if there's something with making the sprays that is more likely. So more research needs to be done. And again, to put in perspective, there are carcinogens in things we do and touch every day. Women who use birth control pills, carcinogen. Tanning beds, carcinogen. The sun is a carcinogen. Barbecued meat that's charred is a carcinogen for stomach and colorectal cancer. Alcohol is a carcinogen. So there's a number of carcinogens, not to minimize benzene, but to realize we are constantly in contact with things that could harm us.
Let's talk alcohol for a moment. How bad is that in terms of its link to cancer?
Well, it's connected, the more you drink. There is no, in fact, we just recorded a radio episode on this that won't air for a while, but with alcohol, there's no safe level or healthiest level for the brain, for instance. It doesn't lead to brain cancer, but it increased amounts, cancer of the larynx, the mouth, the throat, the esophagus, the liver, the breast, the colon. So those all increase with increased alcohol consumption, for instance.
That's a bummer.
it is a bummer.
Everything gives you cancer today. It is.
Water probably doesn't.
That's true. Let's hope. Good, clean, pure water. We're told that you need to cover up, put sunscreen on when you go out. And look, you're a doctor. You must see a lot of melanoma. There's a benefit to sunshine too. Of course, the vitamin D. Are there alternatives out there to sunscreen that will give us protection, at the same time allow us to get the benefits of that vitamin D, and so we don't have to use these over-the-counter products? Or something you recommend?
Well, can we talk about vitamin D first? Because actually, sunshine can't give us all the vitamin D we need. It's pretty amazing that the people with the darkest skin, you said you have pretty dark skin, and then you've got, the dark brown or black skin tones, they can't get enough vitamin D from the sun because their pigment prevents the ultraviolet light from doing the conversion of the chemicals that leads to vitamin D. There was a great study done some years ago, and I just looked it up again last night, and they took about 40 surfers in Hawaii who spent 3 to 5 hours a day in midday sun in Hawaii. 3/4 of them, according to the current level, were vitamin D deficient. So you can't get enough from the sun. So that's actually a myth. It makes some, but it doesn't make enough. So then you ask a great question about, you know, sun protection. I consider, and I only operate on skin cancer all day long, every day at work. Yeah. I consider sunscreen the last line of defense. There are many things that we can do and should do before sunscreen. Number one, if you're inside, you're safe. You cannot get sunburned through window glass. Wow. Number two, if you're outside, try to be in shade. Okay. Unless you're really close to reflected, you know, like sand or concrete. Number three, if you're going to be outside in the sun, the time of day matters. So the higher the sun is in the sky, the less miles of atmosphere that absorbs the ultraviolet light. So the simplest rule of thumb is if your shadow is shorter than you are, try to stay out of direct sun, or then you go to the next step, which would be clothing or hats. A hat with a 2-inch brim, you know, sun visors and baseball hats do very little to protect against sun skin cancer. 2-inch rimmer, more on a hat, does great. There's lightweight clothing now with, you know, UPF instead of SPF 50, which is great. And then if you're going to be out and still you're not protected with that, then a sunscreen. And that's the point at which I would, you know, recommend using sunscreens.
Yeah, my guest today, Dr. Thomas McGovern, if you've got a question, you want to join us, he is an expert, a dermatologist, I should say, who operates, as he pointed out, just about every day on skin cancer. The number here, 888-914-9149, will take your calls and your questions. Yeah, I'm not familiar with this, but one of my producers this morning was telling me that they're going to start to use nanotechnology in sunscreens. I can't imagine how that even works, you know. Are you familiar with any of that? And is that going to be an issue?
Oh,
at all?
Yeah.
We've
been discussing it for a couple of decades. Nanotechnology just means you're focused on particles that are about 1 to 100 nanometers in size, incredibly right. tiny. And so that's commonly used with either titanium dioxide or zinc oxide sunscreens. And when they're not the tiny nanoparticles, that's what gives you kind of the white ghosty appearance when you put on sunscreen. So making particles smaller makes it so you can put it on and you don't have the side effects that some people get from the chemical sunscreen. Those two are the physical sunscreens. They work like a shield. The chemical sunscreens work like a sponge with ultraviolet light. So they've done many studies over the last 10-15 years looking at absorption of these nanoparticles. In virtually every study, they don't get below the top dead layer of skin called the stratum corneum. They just don't get absorbed in those nanoparticles of titanium dioxide and zinc oxide. I was reviewing numerous articles last night, even a review this year of all the recent studies, and showing that right now there's no evidence of harm from those nanoparticles of the titanium dioxide and the zinc oxide.
Wow, that's fascinating.
So I use those all the time on myself in sunscreen.
That's good to know. Really, that's excellent. When it comes to cosmetics outside of sunscreen, you're not worried about the toxic chemicals in that. I think of the stuff that women wear on their face all day, or on their eyes, or where else. I mean, I'm kind of glad I'm a guy. You know, I look at how long it takes, you know, my wife to get ready. I'm like, honey, we're going to be late. You know, she's going to kill me. Is there a danger in this stuff? I mean, I don't know. Maybe does it depend on the brand or?
Before this study, I'd never heard of, you know, perfluoroalkyl substances, PFAS. I found out they've been used since the 50s in things to make clothing and cosmetics shiny or smooth. Throughout that report, if you read through it, there are a lot of waffle words. And when I was doing medical research back at Mayo Clinic, I learned from a medical writer all about waffle words. You're only allowed one per sentence. Well, they used many percents, like potential, possible. In other words, that's what was used to say that these are not known carcinogens. Now, if fluorine is released from them, you know, like in fluoride, if fluorine is released, well, potentially there is, but all through the article says potentially toxic, potential health and environmental risk, precursors to harmful chemicals. So they don't know two things. One, how much is absorbed? And two, when they're absorbed, are they do they become change into things that are toxic? 2018, Denmark's version of their Food and Drug Administration did studies. They found no harm from these PFAs. There is a researcher I just found out in Sweden who's going to be doing research on that very subject with skin cells to see how much is absorbed through the skin, because we don't know. Even the article said, okay, through the tear ducts and through the mouth from lipstick, those would be the main ways they would enter the body now. So far, there's no evidence that they even come in through the skin. So apparently it's been looked at in other countries. I don't know why it's such an interest now. I didn't delve into that. Should it be looked at? Yes. Is there evidence of harm at this point? No.
You know, I had heard somebody one time, a long time ago, outside of the cosmetic sunscreen, say that you really shouldn't use deodorant, or you should get an aluminum-free type of deodorant, because that aluminum builds up in your system. Do you have any concerns about the use of deodorants with aluminum in it?
No, that's what I use all the time. Okay.
They say it can build up in the brain, and it gets in your system and you know, can increase
whatever it might be. In medicine, we talk about true and unrelated. Okay. So it's true that in certain conditions, aluminum build up in the brain, and it's true that sometimes we put aluminum chloride in our armpits. But right now, I don't know of any link that shows putting aluminum chloride in your armpits leads to buildup of aluminum in the brain. No, if you find a study that shows that, I will sign on. But right now, I don't know of that that evidence.
Yeah, and who knows? I mean, this person told me this probably 20 years ago, and I never forgot it. You know how somebody tells you something sometimes, you're like, oh my gosh, it's so horrible. But
sure.
All right, that's good to know. Let me grab a couple quick calls for you, because we only have a couple minutes left. If you want to get in with Dr. McGovern, the number is 888-914-9149. We'll start in Fort Myers, Florida, where it's bright and sunny. Paola listens to us there. Hi, Paola.
Hi, Drew. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for the doctor. I have actual sensitive skin, and I recently got diagnosed with some type of periodermatitis or something on my face. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to know if there's any recommendations for maybe physical sunscreens that you may give me, like a high sunscreen, because
Yeah, I agree with you about the physical sunscreens. That's what I tend to use, and those are the ones with titanium dioxide and zinc oxide. Least known potential for side effects, least likely to be irritating. So that's what's in all the sensitive skin sunscreens. And often it's a mix, because one of them does better with ultraviolet B that causes the burning, and the other one does better with ultraviolet A that causes the aging, the wrinkling of the skin. So often a mix is best. And something that you and all listeners should realize, the average American only puts on a quarter to half the amount of sunscreen that is used to yield the SPF number on the bottle. So the average person using an SPF 30 is really only getting an 8 to 15 protection, which is why I recommend everyone use SPF 60 or higher, not because you need 60 or higher. 30 is a great goal. It's because of how people actually use it.
All right. Hey, Paolo, thanks. Oh, wow. Appreciate hearing
That's great
from you.
To know.
Yeah, good stuff. Margie's listening in Maywood, New Jersey. Hi, Margie. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I just bought a spray. It's called CVS Health Sport 50, and I tried to write down that ingredient, and I don't see any benzo something or other?
See, it's not an ingredient. That's the thing. It was something that was found and might be a contaminant, most likely.
Oh.
So it will never be an ingredient on any of them. I think Drew probably has posted the link to the article about it. And in that article, you can actually find the original list of all the sunscreens and whether one is on it or not.
Yeah, great. Great. Another question. I bought, I was concerned because I'm older, and last year I did do a little swimming, but not very much. And I mean, that's my only exercise, basically. And I ended up with a lot of age spots, which is appropriate at my age, I guess. But it's the first time I've kind of noticed them on my chest area. So I was telling a friend, and she suggested I go to Land's End and buy, I don't remember what they're calling it, but it's a shirt with a long-sleeved shirt that covers, you know, the... And I'm looking, and the label is very expensive, but I figured it's well worth it if it's going to protect me. But I don't remember what they called it. They didn't call it sunscreen. They called it... I don't remember. Yeah.
Patty, if you just go to any sporting goods store, they'll give you that. What are they called, doctor? But that's another great point. When she said that, I thought,
it's just sun protective clothing, and they all have a UPF number for the sun protection. Usually a UPF 50 is great, and they have lightweight ones, too. There's other companies you can order online. Sun Precautions, Coolibar, C-O-O-L-I-B-A-R, are great places to find those.
Yeah, you know, I bought two shirts like that just because I'm going to the beach, you know, and I thought, hey, that sun's so intense down there. My brother-in-law is the one who turned me on to him. He's got several of them because he likes to go into the water, and he has the long sleeve version. And, you know, if you don't want to put the sunscreen on, it's a great way to protect your body. So that's a very natural way of doing it. And Margie, thanks for bringing that up. I'm glad you brought that into the conversation. Maybe one last call here, doctor, because I don't think I have much time left. Patty in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Patty, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have a question. So I've been buying titanium dioxide and zinc oxide sunscreens for years, knowing that the mineral is better than these ones with oxybenzone and avobenzone. So my husband hates it because you can't rub it in. It's all white. It's opaque. You look kind of like a ghost. But I kind of don't care as long as my kids are protected. So I just found some on the shelf at Walgreens that has these two active ingredients. However, when you spray it on, it turns green. It's kind of foamy, but it almost seems irritable, and it has these other inactive ingredients. Do you happen to know whether or not there are other, I mean, they're unpronounceables, basically, and whether or not those ingredients pose a risk? You know, you look for the active ingredients and get excited, but do those pose a risk for... other harms? Do you know anything about that?
You know, great question, because the sprays have to have other chemicals so it can be sprayed on. That's probably what's leading to that green color. So I don't know if they're safe or not, but I do know it's because of the format it's in. So if it were a cream or lotion, you probably wouldn't get that green color.
All right. Hey, doctor, I want to thank you for your time. Great to have you here. Oh, a wonderful conversation. So appropriate right now.
You're welcome.
Heels of the 4th of July. Stay on the line, though. I do want to talk to you. I got a question for you, too, that I want to run by you.
Certainly.
And stay with me when we come back, too. Dr. Robert DiBolli is going to be stopping by. You know, I heard Father Rocky say the pandemic is officially over. He's decided not to, I guess, pray the prayer of Our Lady of Good Help during the noon mass. So I thought, that's a good point. Where are we? It's July 1st, halfway through the year. Is COVID-19 behind us?
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
With each change in the virus, there is a chance it could become more contagious, more deadly.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It is always just a wonderful time hanging out with you. I always enjoy looking at life and the many challenges that face us through the eyes of faith. And, you know, look, Catholics have eye problems. You know, they got skin problems. They we have financial problems, health problems. We've all dealt with COVID. And that's the beauty of some of these guests I'm able to bring to answer your questions and give you those clear perspectives on it. You know, Father Rocky, I had a dinner with him a couple nights ago, and we were with a friend of ours who is a physician. And he said to the doc, he says, is COVID over? COVID's over, right? Because he says, I'm going to go on the air. And because every day during the mass, the end of the mass, he prays that prayer to Our Lady of Good Health, a very powerful prayer. And he says, as of July 1st, he's going to stop. And it kind of got my attention. I thought, it's actually a pretty good question, right? If you get in your car today and you go to any store or any restaurant or anywhere, nobody is wearing masks. There might be 1 out of 100 people you'll see that is still wearing a mask. But fundamentally, whether people have been vaccinated or not, nobody is wearing masks. And yet we hear a lot about the Delta variant, right? And that's supposedly highly contagious, and it has a lot of people concerned. So I thought, where are we when it comes to COVID-19? We should talk about it. Is the pandemic over? Is it behind us? You know, the World Health Organization is very concerned about this new variant, this Delta variant of COVID-19. So is the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. But the WHO and the CDC, they're taking different approaches to their concerns. the WHO's calling for people to mask up again, right? And when you're indoors, even people who are vaccinated, don't throw those masks out. You need to mask up. Los Angeles also made the same recommendation. So LA was talking about that. But the CDC, they're not making that recommendation. This comes as, of course, the Delta variant now accounts for a quarter of all new cases and has been detected in 50 states. So should you be concerned about the Delta variant? Here's what one doctor said about it. He was talking to ABC News, starting first with the hopeful news.
The good news about the Delta variant is that the vaccines that are currently being used are effective against the Delta variant. But what it says to me is that when there's widespread transmission around the globe, it is far too soon to declare victory here in the United States, even though the numbers here in the U.S. are looking really, really good. They're going down in just about every state.
But still knowing this, what kind of precautions should families take who have unvaccinated children? What precautions should they take right now?
Yeah, so, you know, the Delta virus points to the fact that kids are at risk. That strain, it appears, affects children at a greater rate. And so even though the numbers are going down, you need to be careful around kids, especially kids who have medical conditions like asthma. The current guidelines are that unvaccinated people, and that includes children, wear masks indoors when they are going to be around other people. Thankfully, it's getting to the warmer weather and more people are outside. And being outside without masks is a very safe thing to be, as long as you're not in very crowded conditions.
So right now, the latest figures show that about a half of the overall population is fully vaccinated. All right. Last time I saw a stat, it was 60% had one shot. But latest figures, and I asked my producer to look this up for me today. I said, you know, find out, where are we in terms of vaccination? He said half of the overall population is fully vaccinated. It does not include people who have had the disease and now have natural immunity. So it does not include that group. You might be one of those. You know, one public health expert was saying that we're about, if you really want to look at the numbers, we're probably about 66% of the population having either natural immunity or having been fully vaccinated. And of course, the magic number everybody shoots for is about 70%, but that's good. It's not the 80%, even higher. They want 8 out of 10 people. They believe we need to reach herd immunity. So we're not quite there yet, but getting the remaining 14% to get vaccinated, that's probably going to be hard to do. At least officials, you know, those in the vaccination business think that it's going to be really difficult. There's a lot of reasons why people either aren't getting the vaccinations or you know, how you're going to get them to get it. But there are all kinds of ways, including sending direct emails to people who have not received them. In fact, I'll keep his name confidential, but somebody I know you probably have heard here on the air before told me that in the state he lives, he's getting emails from the state. He has not been vaccinated yet, and that they're asking him, they're reminding him and telling him where he can get it. So he wrote back to them in all caps saying, I don't want to be told what to do by the state. But, you know, that's his state. I don't know what your state is like. Officials believe, and they've come out, that the vaccines are going to protect against all variants that are out there. And I want to get the expertise of Dr. Bob Tabali on that. Will your Pfizer, your J&J, will your Moderna protect you against the Delta variant? There are some in Israel that have been vaccinated. You know, in fact, that's the most vaccinated country percentage-wise in the world. They're seeing cases of people who have been vaccinated, and yet they're still getting sick from this variant. So there's a lot to talk about. Is COVID behind us? What do we know about Delta? You're going to need to re-masks, you know, as soon as the summer's over. If you have not been vaccinated yet and you've got a question too, or if you just want to join the conversation, feel free to dial in. I've got a few minutes left in the hour with you, and it's 888-914-9149. I'm joined right now by our go-to expert on COVID-19. He's an infectious disease doctor, and it's good to have with us once again, Dr. Robert Tabali. And a lot of people, doctor, want to know how to spell your name, so let me spell it for them. It's T-I-B-A-L-L-I. And I actually gave you a plug a couple days ago, and somebody wrote to me, I heard my son has Lyme's disease, and what was the name of that doctor? And I know that you're now also dealing with a lot of Lyme. So to that point, before we get to COVID, Are you seeing a lot of Lyme? And I'm assuming that gets worse in the fall. Maybe it does right now in June and July. I don't know. What are you seeing in that area?
Well, in my part of the Midwest, in northwest Illinois, southern Wisconsin, eastern Iowa, the tick incidence is huge this year. I've never seen so many ticks. Wow. And I've already been treating probably close to 100 patients for newly acquired Lyme disease this year already. And that's unusual. That's significantly higher than normal. But, you know, that's a lot of what I'm doing now. And I've actually kind of changing the nature of my practice and starting a new practice. It's not on the web yet, but my current practice is Germ Busters. But I'm going to be starting the St. Rock Center, St. Rock, St. Rocco, St. Roche, a lot of different ways to spell it. But he suffered from the plague, and he was a patron saint of pestilence, which I think is a lot like Lyme disease. And I've suffered from advanced neurologic Lyme disease myself. And I know there's not a lot of providers out there that actually will, A, listen to you, B, know how to diagnose it, C, know how to treat it. And so I maybe this is my area of ministry going forward, is taking care of Lyme patients. And so I kind of welcome it, but there's not a lot of infection doctors that will do that.
All right. Thanks, Doc. And if people want to track it down, I guess you can just do a search for your name and somehow find you.
Germbusters.com.
I thought that was down. That's still up. Good for you. Germbusters.com. Check it out. Germbusters.com. That's the website. Hey, let's talk about the pandemic. In your opinion, where are we? We've got the Delta variant that it's manifesting in different parts of the world. There's cases here. But for the most part, I look around. Life has almost returned to normal. There's no masks. People are going about it. I'm not hearing of a whole lot of cases of people that are grappling with this. Where are we right now in the COVID-19 battle and the pandemic? Is it behind us? Are we ahead of it now?
Well, you know, there's the official word on that, and then there's, you know, impressions from people like me on the street, so to speak. And the people high up in healthcare, they can't really be too aggressive in their understanding of it or their declared understanding of it. I think we're actually in much better situation now than the government would let on. You know, the 54%, 55% of all people have been vaccinated. I think of the remainder, I think at least 20, 25% of people have had natural infection and have gotten over it, whether or not they realize it. But there's a significant portion of the population that neither has had COVID or does not have immunity, because not everyone that gets vaccinated develops immunity. If you've got an underlying immune disorder, if you're on some of these immunosuppressants for lupus or for inflammatory bowel disease or rheumatoid arthritis, those people don't convert on the vaccine at a very high rate. And so a lot of people can go through two vaccine series of the mRNA vaccines and not develop immunity. There was just a study published regarding solid organ transplant patients, heart, lung, liver, you know, so on, most of those patients did not convert and develop immunity after vaccination, but this study looked at giving them three vaccines, all 30 days apart, and 30 days after the third vaccination, 70% of them had measurable immunity in their blood with development of antibodies. But if somebody's got underlying, like a bone marrow transplant or lymphoma or leukemia, history, even being treated and technically in remission, immune systems don't work quite normally in those situations. And those patients have a very low successful vaccine series. Now, it may be that those folks will need to have three vaccines or possibly four in order to get immunity. Those people are going to be at risk throughout this entire epidemic. And I support the opening of society and everything like that, but I'm a little concerned that there's going to be some continued circulation of the coronavirus in the United States. And once we start seeing influenza this next flu season, which we will, because nobody's going to be wearing masks. Now, the major benefit, looking backwards, of the masks was we didn't have influenza. And I kind of worry about influenza's genes kind of swapping around with coronavirus genes if the small number of people that are going to be susceptible to it get co-infected. And that could knock out an even more aggressive strain, and we could be under the same type of issues, this fall or winter that we were a year ago. I'm not trying to be Mr. Dr. Doom and gloom about it, but it's troubling. But the whole news about vaccines is great, about the fact that the Delta variant that we're seeing now, most of the people that are vaccinated, 70 to 80% at minimum, will have a high level of protection against those variants. And people that do get sick after being vaccinated, it's usually much milder than otherwise would have been if they weren't vaccinated. Virtually all the hospitalizations right now and the deaths that are occurring from COVID in the United States are in patients that have not been vaccinated. I personally am strongly waiting for that Novavax to come out. Yeah. They did announce that they're going to be doing a trial with a mixed vaccine of influenza and coronavirus this fall. They're going to be doing a trial of that. They just published their British data yesterday. We expect them to drop off their United States study data, which is what would be needed for the FDA approval. That's supposed to occur in the third quarter this year, which starts today. And so I really hope they get that vaccine approved as soon as possible. If I was high up in the government, I'd be calling Novavax and saying, please, can you drop off your data?
And doctor, on that point, for those who don't know, of course, the ones we in America are getting are J&J, Moderna, and Pfizer. Novavax is coming out. Quite often people have concerns about the morality of the of certain vaccines. J&J, some people are concerned about more so than Pfizer or Moderna. The church has said it's okay to get those. Novavax, and I don't want to get into all of the, we have to spend a whole lot of time camping out on those issues that we've dealt with in the past, but what about Novavax? What is it that makes you wait for it and not get a Pfizer or a Moderna? And is it going to be more efficacious? Is it more moral? I mean, fill me in, does it differ from Pfizer?
Well, Pfizer, Moderna, and Novavax were not developed or manufactured using the use of aborted fetal cell tissue cultures, which are not recently acquired, but, are 30, 40, 50 years old. The Novavax is virtually as effective in preventing disease, and it's significantly less side effects than the messenger RNA vaccines or the AstraZeneca or Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So just as good, less side effects. It's kind of like a diet beer, tastes great, less filling. It's kind of like everything. There's a lot of myocarditis occurring in younger adults, 12 to 16, that are getting the vaccine. It's still an uncommon event, but it's a significant issue. You talked about Israel before. Where Israel's having the outbreaks is in their young adult population and their pediatric population, because they vaccinated all the adults and the people at high risk. And the young adults, adolescents, are the last group to be vaccinated in Israel. Now, they're going after that with great gusto right now, trying to vaccinate them, but that's really where the seed of their current outbreak is right now. And all vaccines are not equal. Vaccines you might hear about in the rest of the world, the Russian Sputnik V and Sputnik Light, and the Chinese Sinovac, they don't really hold a candle to these vaccines that were developed here in the U.S. Much more effective. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. That's good to know. Let's take a few calls for you. If you want to join us, my guest, in fact, let me take a break. And when I come back, we'll take a few calls rather than cut you off. So if you're on hold, I'll get you on. If you want to get in, I only have about 10 or 15 minutes left to spend with you today. I wish I had a couple more hours. It's always good to look at life and explore these really important issues. The number to get in is 888-914-9149. You can call now, 888-914-9149. Jake just posted a question on Twitter, so go check this out and sound off, and we'll give you the results as they come in. Do you personally believe the pandemic is behind us? Do you believe that the pandemic is now over? You can go to Twitter at Drew Mariani Show. You'll find us there. Sound off. We'll be right back.
we will significantly reduce the threat to our citizens, and we will ultimately and expeditiously defeat this virus.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, welcome back. Great to be here with you today. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. If you'd like to join us, it's 888-914-9149. We're taking a look at the COVID-19 pandemic, and we've walked this path together, haven't we? It's been a year and a half, maybe even just a little bit longer. And Dr. Tabali has been our infectious disease doctor who's given us insight as, you know, we came to understand how this worked, and we saw the development of vaccines. There's a new one on the horizon called Novavax. He's waiting for that to come out. I know many people have gotten, of course, the Pfizer or the Moderna. And Dr. Tabali and I were talking off air, and he says, you know, that vaccine was completely developed outside of that. It was tested later, of course, in that, but it's a lot different than the J&J vaccine. And Doctor, let's go to the phones. We'll grab a few calls. If you want to join us, it's 888-914-9149. Again, you could take our poll on Twitter at Drew Mariani Show. Right now, 52% of people surveyed, we were asked the question, do you believe the pandemic is now over? 55%, Jake is saying, believe it is behind us. Patricia's listening in Nevada, and she wants to talk with you, Doctor. Good afternoon. Patricia, you're on the air.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call, Drew.
You're welcome.
So for Dr. Tabali, I'd like to ask about the 88% effectiveness rate for the mRNA vaccines. I'm wondering if that means, because I remember early on they said that the vaccines don't prevent contracting the virus, but more just preventing serious symptoms and hospitalizations. And I'm wondering if the 88% effectiveness rate is against just contracting the virus, period. And if that is true, then does that also mean that 12% of the time there are these breakthrough cases?
Well, information is continuously gathered now that many millions of people have had the vaccine. And so our understanding of what's happened and what happens when you get the vaccine, what protections you get, that continues to evolve, and our database is getting bigger. So the way we understand it today, as we're talking today, is that people that are vaccinated, they can get infected. They may not have any symptoms, and they can have extremely low carriage of the virus in their nasopharynx and be very, very low infective to anybody else. And so for some people, it's nearly completely protective, so that if they're exposed to a virus, they could get an infection, they could get a mild infection, not know they're infected, and never have any virus in their oral pharynx to speak of. But for some people, there is going to be about 3 to 5% of people that get vaccinated that could have significant illness, where they might have to have other medications or supplemental oxygen or be hospitalized. But that's a tremendous decrease over the unvaccinated experience, where a significant number of patients have to have more. But the messenger RNA vaccines are considered to be about 93-95% effective in that, and they're considered to be in the mid-80s to like 88% or so against the new variants that are coming out. So with all these new, the wild strain, the initial one that came in through China into Washington State, and then the Alpha, which was the British variant, which rapidly became the most popular one in the United States. Now the Delta variant is doubling every week. It's now up to, I think, 26-27%. It'll be 55% of new cases next week and 90-some percent in a few weeks. But that's where the 80% effectiveness that we're talking about. It's somewhere in the 80s. Everyone's different. One's 81%, one's 85%, one's 86%. They're all still pretty helpful. But the people that get the vaccine, they do experience a benefit and do have increased ability to survive an infection without any symptoms or having an extremely mild case of coronavirus.
All right, let's see who's up next. Richard is listening in is it Clovis? Clovis, California. And he's got a question about the vaccine and his wife. Hi, Richard. Good afternoon.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I got a question for the doctor. My wife and I, we both had COVID back in December, and we recovered from it. My son had it as well. And we're really on the fence whether or not we should take the vaccine. We've done some research, and there's just not really any clear messages out there about somebody who's already had COVID, whether or not there's a benefit or even to take the vaccine. What's your recommendation on that?
Great question.
Well, yeah, it's a great question. Unfortunately, it's one that nobody can really answer with an informed position. You know, we've got all this data now about the vaccine, but we don't have a lot of data on natural immunity. And we do know that the T cells, which are the natural killer cells, the cells that get depleted in AIDS and so on, those cells continue to have long-standing memory. And there was a study out that the plasma cells, which make immunoglobulins from bone marrow specimens in people that had had a coronavirus infection, they were, once exposed to coronavirus, they quickly started making antibody. It's probably going to be a long-standing level of immunity, but we just don't know for sure. We do know that if you had coronavirus, and I always recommend, you know, waiting a period of at least 4 to 6 months before you would consider getting a vaccination. But if you just get one Pfizer vaccine, it raises your measurable blood antibody by 140 times.
Wow.
Not 140%, but 140 times. And it increases your T-cell activity 5 times. So,
wow.
I mean, it should be like a booster, but unfortunately, like, you know, my employer or hospital or somebody like that, they would say, we can't do that. You have to get 2 vaccines. You have to get fully vaccinated. And the more times you get vaccinated, I mean, like that, and you have an underlying immunological memory, I mean, you're more likely to have a side effect of the vaccination. That's why I think that the Novavax will be so much of benefit, because there's a lot of people that don't want to get vaccinated with the messenger RNA vaccines because they've either had coronavirus or they've reacted badly to other vaccines or whatever. But the Novavax, yeah, significantly less side effects. And, you know, if I could ask the listeners, do me one favor, you know, call your congressman and tell him you want the Novavax approved. I mean, there's going to be a lot of pressure from the other vaccine manufacturers not to approve this vaccine because they're going to say, we already have enough vaccines. We don't need any more. But what, 30%, 40% of the population is not willing to get vaccinated right now? I think a significant portion will embrace the Novavax. And that's one I'm going to be recommending for all my patients once it's released, hopefully soon.
So you're recommending to hold off for that until the Novavax comes out?
I would. If your authority that supervises you, they're mandating you to get vaccinated, I would hope that they would allow you to just have one vaccine based on the studies. But as far as I know, nobody is doing that. They're all demanding that you get fully vaccinated, which is 2 vaccines. And I've had some friends in the medical profession who've had coronavirus who've waited an appropriate length of time, gotten vaccinated, and had significant side effects, you know, neurologic issues, numbness and tingling in the hands. This isn't a surgeon. You know, it's a problem. Other people have gait disturbances. One gentleman he has a terrible neuropathy in one side where he received the vaccine. He's one of my most difficult patients to take care of. But the answer to your question is yes. It would. I mean, for my patients, I'm advising them to wait until the Novavax is out.
Yeah. So the mRNA technology that's used, and Richard, thanks for the call. This is the future of vaccinations, though, isn't it? This technology. I mean, I saw a piece not too long ago with I think it was Moderna or whoever was behind it, on how they can go in, adjust their code, and boom, you've got a new and very effective vaccination. They're even talking about using this mRNA technology, maybe even to target cancer and things along those lines. Will this be used by pharmaceutical companies now to deliver new vaccinations? I mean, is this the future? And I've spoken to other physicians. They tend to think this is a pretty good thing.
Well, it is, but it comes with a bit of a downside a little bit. It's such a potent manipulator of the immune system that it can cause unintended consequences as well. And I don't want to say I'm a big promoter of these vaccines.
Right.
But you know, if a product like the Novavax, which similarly is a relatively new technology and can also be manipulated very quickly to make adjustments for new variants, if that is given a spot on the playing field, that will become the dominant player in this vaccine market for coronavirus very quickly.
Hey, doctor, let me interrupt for just a second here because I have less than a minute. There are some people who wonder if they've had one dose of Moderna or Pfizer, can they get the Novavax as their second shot? Can you mix and match your vaccinations?
Well, in shortage areas, that's what they were doing. They were mixing and matching. Like if you had vaccine A and it wasn't available and it was time to get a second dose, you could get vaccine B. It's not clear whether or not they're going to look back and approve that as fulfilling requirements for employment and so on. They may demand that you get the same vaccine twice.
Well, my gratitude to you, doctor. My thanks to Dr. Robert Tabali. You can check him out. His website is germbusters.com. Germbusters.com. Send them an email if you have a question. And, of course, we'll have him back at some point in the future. I'm out of time for the day. Until next time, God bless.